Welcome back to the BPOS podcast. As always, if you're watching on Spotify or YouTube, please subscribe. Leave a 5-star rating. Leave a review. I read all of them. It helps the podcast tremendously. It helps us get the word out. So thank you for that. Today I'm joined by Sam Hendel. And Sam, we like literally just met 5 minutes ago.
Correct. Yeah.
So thank you for taking a chance on this.
Of course.
Look, I got introduced to the Good Grief Running Club just from a meeting I had a few weeks ago. And as I did some research on it, I thought, well, this podcast really revolves heavily around grief and trauma. And the Good Grief Running Club seems like a perfect fit.
I agree.
Yeah.
Excited to share more. So thanks for having me. Yeah.
And then I think I was telling you earlier this morning, I had a meeting with somebody and as I was leaving, they overheard me say to my wife, hey, I'm going to record, you know, with this girl from the Good Grief Running Club. And she says, the Good Grief Running Club? How do you know them? And I was like, well, I don't.
Yeah. We're about to get to know each other well. Yeah.
I can't wait. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're local here in Austin?
I'm local here in Austin. I have been here since 2017. Oh. So it's been almost 8 years since I moved here. I grew up in Buffalo, New York, but Austin home now.
Yeah. So, all right. Since you're from Buffalo, best wings are at the Anchor or what?
Oh, no. That's like, they started at the Anchor Bar.
Okay.
But if you're a Buffalo local, you know, that's like the best spots are the hidden gem, like dive bars.
Yeah.
Bar Bills, Gabriel's Gate.
Okay.
Really like Elmo's. If you ever go to Buffalo.
Awesome.
Definitely got to try that spot.
Okay.
Here in Austin, Nickel City does have amazing wings because the owner is from Buffalo as
well. Oh, interesting.
So it's a Bills bar.
Okay. I will have to try that.
Yes.
You know who else actually does killer wings? Home Slice, the North location.
I've never tried. I'll have to give it a try.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's funny because growing up in the Northeast, I'm familiar with decent wings.
Yeah.
Joseph, the founder of Home Slice, told me when they opened that place and started doing wings, the biggest complaints he got were A, they were too crispy.
No, that's the best part.
And B, they weren't this giant meat lollipop.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't enough meat on them. And he was like, yeah, because they're actually, you know, good normal.
Oh, that breaks my heart. Honestly, yeah. I bet they eat them with ranch and not blue cheese, too. So
maybe the people that are complaining order with ranch. Yeah. That's probably a good point.
That's
all right.
Funny.
Nickel City. I'm going to try that one. I
can't
wait.
It's great.
I love a good wing. Cool. All right. Yeah. So you grew up in Buffalo.
I did.
And what brought you to Austin?
I moved here right after college for a career. I worked in tech sales. I'm not doing that anymore. But like many people, I came here for the tech scene. I worked at Oracle back in the day.
Yep.
So me and thousands of others migrated here for that reason. But
where's that campus?
It's over off of Riverside.
Yes. It's huge.
Yeah. When I first moved here, it was up off of Parmer, so north, far north Austin.
Okay.
And then started in their new campus, and it was a great experience. But the first time I had ever been to Austin was the day that I moved here. So took a chance on Austin and have loved it ever since.
Sight unseen.
Sight unseen. Yep.
Good for you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you got adventure in your spirit.
I'm a little bit, I will say. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And how long were you at Oracle?
I was at Oracle for about 2.5 years.
Okay.
And then I was working at a startup called The Nudge. They text you things to do around Austin. Well, they're across 10 cities now, but I was doing marketing and content for them.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah, it was such an amazing experience.
Tech sales to marketing.
Tech sales to marketing.
Okay.
I was drawn to The Nudge because I'm a very extroverted person who likes to try new things.
Awesome.
And so it was a dream job. I got to be so familiar with Austin, try so many things around the city, meet a lot of local business owners, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And then back in May, I left to do some freelance on my own.
Okay.
So we're on my own now.
Marketing.
Mm-hmm. Marketing.
Oh, very
a lot
cool.
of different marketing projects. Social media, marketing events. Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And that's going well?
It's going well.
Good.
Being an entrepreneur, as one can imagine, has its challenges, but so far so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least when you're an entrepreneur, your boss isn't a jerk.
I'm tough on myself sometimes, so I don't know. I can be a jerk to myself, but it's definitely been a good experience so far.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Any big, clients or projects that you are super proud of you want to talk about?
I just started working with Zed's Ice Cream
this
past week, which is my favorite ice cream place in Austin. So I'm really excited about that. I'm helping them with their PR. So that's one I'm really excited about and proud of.
Oh, you're multifaceted.
Multifaceted.
Marketing, social, and PR.
Yeah, it kind of all falls under the same bucket. But yeah.
That's great.
These days. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good for you.
Thank you.
I have... I've never met somebody who is usually they're really good at one or two of those things, but never good at all of them. So good on you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. I would say events are my bread and butter and social media strategy.
Okay.
But kind of do it all as an agency. So whatever they need.
So were you on your own during COVID?
I was not.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I was still at the Nudge, which was a crazy time because things to do around Austin. A lot of at-home activities, trying to get people just mentally stimulated from their homes or, you know, hikes. I probably have done every hike in a 6-hour radius of Austin.
Oh, awesome.
You name it, I've done it. So it was a really good experience, but definitely challenging during COVID.
That's really cool. You know, my wife, Rochelle, when we lost Connor, one of the things that she started was this 52-week hike challenge.
Okay.
Where she did 52 hikes in 52 weeks in 52 different places.
That's amazing.
Around. So, yeah, I'm sure you guys have hiked a lot of the same trails.
Yeah, all here in Texas?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
No, I take that back. We were on vacation, or actually she was on vacation at one point with her family, and I think some of them were in Arizona or something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
But the majority of them were, right here. And most of them, you know, not too far from Austin.
Yes, it's quite a flat city, I will say. So in order to get some elevation, you have to do a bit of a drive. But it was very fun.
Yeah.
So.
That's great.
Yeah.
Cool. So you're an outdoors person.
Love the outdoors.
Okay.
It's helped me immensely just getting outside and, you know, speaking on grief. That's one of the things I really turned to was being outdoors and running outside and love hiking, really anything out in the sun.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. On that note, why don't we just dive into it? So
sure.
You have an organization that you call the Good Grief Running Club, right?
Yes, that's
and
correct.
I'm assuming that there's a story behind the formation of that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
Okay.
So I've always been into fitness, but not a huge piece of my life. I actually was a nerdy theater kid, not an athlete. So, I had decided to run my first half marathon when I first moved to Austin back in 2017.
Okay.
A coworker of mine was a big runner and she convinced me to sign up for the 3M half marathon. And I did it, and I threw up at the finish line and had to go to the medical tent. Like, that's how out of shape I was. And after that, I was like, you know what? I'm going to get better at this because that was so hard, but I'm really determined to get better. So 2022, I did the Austin Half Marathon. Very challenging. But leading up to that, my mom had been pretty sick. With what she thought was the flu, just cough, flu-like symptoms, nothing really super concerning.
Right.
And my mom was super supportive, like called me 3 times a day. What's up? How are you? What's going on in your life? We talked all the time.
And is your mom still in, was she still in Buffalo or here?
She's still in Buffalo.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Got it.
Yeah. So it was the morning of the half marathon. And I hadn't heard from her, so that was odd. And then I started running, still hadn't heard from her. I distinctly remember I was at mile 7 of Austin Half Marathon, and I got a call from my sister while I was running. I had my headphones in, so I answered, and I was like, what's up? I haven't heard from anyone today. And mid-run, she said, Mom is in the hospital. She is not really feeling well. Like, she was super dizzy and lightheaded, so we came in to check it out, get some blood work done. Didn't really know any answers. So finished the run, celebrated with my friends, and then later on that day, got a call from my sister saying they had done a bunch of tests. Mom has small cell lung cancer, which obviously everyone's familiar with cancer, but didn't know what small cell lung cancer meant. So immediately we're going to the internet, which is the worst thing you can possibly do. And it's a very rare cancer. There are very, very few treatment options, and the likelihood of survival is about 3%, wow, according to Google.
Okay.
Don't recommend looking up things on Google. So, as you can imagine, toughest day ever.
Yeah.
In the same week, which I don't really share this a lot as well, but in the same week, my dad had a routine colonoscopy, and they found that he had stage 4 colon cancer. So my dad is still with us. He's still alive. But both parents getting diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in the same week, you're a 20-something-year-old girl living on your own, not around family. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, it was really, really devastating.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I didn't really know what to expect along the next few months of what would be pretty traumatizing. Immediately, they got my mom into treatment, which, if you've ever worked with the healthcare system, can be very frustrating sometimes, just trying to advocate and push for the best care. And there's a lot of wait times also because there's so many people who are sick. Yeah. So my mom started treatment. It was working for a few months, but she was on a pretty intense chemo. So she started losing her hair. She was feeling really sick and tired, just not her very, you know, same bubbly, outgoing self.
Right.
At the same time, my dad started undergoing treatment. He needed a surgery. So my sister and I were like, so I have an older sister. She's 4 years older than me, and she also lives in Buffalo. She's
okay.
Married with 3 kids. She's superwoman. I don't know how she does everything with 3 kids and a marriage. But
yeah.
So her and I were kind of like, okay, you take mom today, you take dad today. We'll go to both appointments when we can. And it was interesting because my parents were divorced. They were on amazing terms, but obviously not together. So we were splitting up, going to treatments for one person, and my dad needed surgery in Pittsburgh, so we all took a trip to Pittsburgh.
Oh, geez.
It was the most insane 9 months is how long my mom fought for. So eventually the treatment in Buffalo stopped working. And we had heard of a doctor in Columbus, Ohio, which is crazy because I actually went to Ohio State. And there was a clinical trial in Columbus at Ohio State University that we luckily got my mom enrolled in because it was kind of a last ditch effort, really. Right. There was nothing else that the hospital she was at could offer. So I basically was flying back and forth at least once a month in Buffalo or Columbus with my mom for 2-3 weeks at a time. Luckily, while I was working at the Nudge, they were the most incredible people ever and still was able to maintain a remote role while doing all of these things.
Yeah, that's great. Shout out to the Nudge.
Yeah, shout out to my company at the time. So I was very fortunate to have that flexibility to be able to do that. But it was like, do I move home? On top of it all, I went through a breakup during this time of someone that I had been dating for a few years.
Just to add a little more spice.
Just to add a little more spice. Yeah. So was grieving a breakup, of a long-term relationship who, you know, someone you think is going to be your support system. So I was like, okay, well, that is a huge, huge piece of my life missing. But obviously my biggest concern right now is my parents.
Right.
So didn't even really get to grieve that because I was so focused on just being there for my family.
Interesting.
So unfortunately in November, so her 2-year anniversary of her death is coming up this month. Unfortunately she passed the day after Thanksgiving, November 26, 2022. My whole family was there, you know, it was oddly like best case scenario where you get to say everything that you've ever wanted to say. But also obviously losing your mom as I was 27 at the time. Horrible.
Yeah.
And also my dad was still sick. So I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I just lost my mom, was grieving this, mm-hmm. was also grieving kind of like being a normal 20 something year old in a city like Austin. I kind of just saw all my friends living normal lives. And there's almost this like anger you have, like, okay, why can't I go to a party this weekend? And it feels almost weird living a normal life when something like that is happening in sure. your personal life. You're like, well, this crazy, horrible thing just happened to me. How can I just go to a party and someone asks, how are you? And you're like, oh, my mom just died. Yeah, like,
right.
It's not a normal conversation.
No.
I mean, it is normal, but it's not socially normal to talk about. So spent a few months back in Buffalo just with my family and, you know, it was heavy, heavy grieving. I honestly was grieving leading up to it because when you kind of know that it's coming,
mm-hmm.
it's almost, I don't know what's better or what's worse if you like know it's coming or if it's just unexpected, but it was the most difficult time of my life. And yeah. I mean, obviously it continues to be, but I was severely depressed. Like suicidal thoughts, really, really down bad.
Mm.
Especially, you know, it was so hard because my dad was also sick. Felt really bad kind of turning to him to grieve as well because I'm like, he's going through so much.
Yeah, that's tough.
My sister was obviously going through the same thing.
Yeah.
I had just gone through a breakup with someone who was my support system, so couldn't reach out to them.
Right.
I had a solid friend group, which was amazing. So I had a lot of support there. But also during those times, like something people don't really talk about is you learn a lot about people who will show up for you in the dark times versus just the good times. So then there's also that aspect of it. Like people who I thought, you know, were there and were my friends, where were they when I needed them?
Yeah.
So there was so much going on.
That's actually, if I can stop you there for just for sure. 1 second, I think it's a really important point because there is something happens, right? Mm-hmm. And it can be very surprising and, you know, often very disappointing.
Yeah.
When people you think are your close friends kind of disappear.
Yep.
Just because they don't know how to handle it or they're uncomfortable or something like that. And
yes.
Yeah, that's one of the early episodes I did. You know, I started this podcast and I basically just did these little 10 or 15 minute talks, right?
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what the grieving process was. And all I wanted was for somebody to tell me what's going to happen. What am I going to go through? You know, what's next? What should I expect? You know, where's this playbook? Give it to me. That's all I need so that I know. Right. Yeah. And it was one of the things I did an episode called I Didn't Know What to Say. And it was all about people who just, you know, they're uncomfortable. So their mentality is, I don't know what to say, so I'm just not going to say anything. Well, that's the worst thing you could do. Just say, I don't know what to say, right? There's nothing yeah. wrong with that. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now.
No, I think to that point, like, the people who really showed up for me, some of the best things they did was just sit in the room in silence.
Yeah.
With me. I'm like, you don't have to say anything. I just don't want to be alone right now.
Yeah.
And they would come over, and if I was able to eat, they would bring me whatever it was and just sit in silence. They're like, we can turn a show on, we can talk, we can have a bottle of wine, whatever you're feeling today. And yeah, so it definitely was very eye-opening in that aspect as well, but totally changed my mentality about, okay, where am I going to put my effort and energy, like, moving forward, and how am I going to get myself out of this very dark place that I was in. So having gone through all of that, I needed something very extreme to, I'm kind of like an all in or all out person.
Okay.
And so I decided that I was going to sign up for a marathon, as a way to have a big goal. I needed a big goal to just pull myself out and like focus on something healthy for me.
Good for you.
I was in therapy, I was exercising, I was doing all the things, but I'm like, it's just not enough. I need something like big that scares me in like a healthy way.
Yeah.
So I signed up for the Austin Marathon and decided to raise money for a nonprofit called Longevity. So they raise money specifically for lung cancer research. And I asked them.
Real fast, Longevity?
Longevity.
Okay, cool, yep. Clever, got it.
And I reached out to them and I said, I'm going to run a marathon and I would love to raise money for this cause, specifically for small cell lung cancer, because there are very few treatment options and it's very uncommon. It's pretty rare. So I began my training journey. A friend of mine, his name is Corey Camp. He is an incredible athlete. And so he was like, if you're looking for a coach, I had no idea what I was doing. I had run a half marathon before, but specifically because, you know, I got that call during the Austin half marathon. And I was just like, it's kind of like almost redemption for me to show myself that I can do hard things.
Okay.
So over the course of 20 weeks, I trained, put on fundraising events. A beautiful friend of mine, McCall, helped me host a yoga class. She's a yoga teacher. So we raised like almost $1,000 during that class. The support that I got during that time was incredible. And I think to the point of where people don't know what to say, it was interesting to see, like, I'm hosting a yoga class that's raising money for this cause. It was cool to see people have a thing to show up to support you versus having to say something, because there's never anything you can really say. So trained over the course of 20 weeks, raised almost $4,000 for Longevity. My dad came down for the marathon February of this past year, and it was just a life-changing experience. The support that I had during training, the immense, like, just change in myself that I saw mentally from running changed my life. I had a reason to get up in the morning. I met the most incredible community of humans who were also running for very similar reasons, whether it was grieving the loss of a loved one, a breakup, just moving to a new city and wanting to figure out a way to better themselves. You don't normally sign up for a marathon just for funsies, I learned. Typically, the first one is a bit scary and you have a reason behind doing it. And then a lot of the time it's addicting because it's like the most rewarding feeling ever. So I finished the marathon in February, and running completely changed my life. The community of people that I met totally changed my life, and it just became such a big passion of mine, which is interesting because it all kind of happened so fast. Like, if you knew me 2 years ago, I love concerts and going out, and I was not the most fit or like athletic person. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I identify as a runner. So it was just a fast change. But I noticed how amazing running was for my mental health and the community of people. And so in May of 2024, this past year, the Nudge actually went through a round of layoffs, which we had to let go of the whole marketing and content team. So I was impacted by layoffs. And so I had a bit of time on my hands trying to figure out what I was going to do next. Do I want to go on my own? Do I want to interview? But I had always had this little voice in the back of my head, and the rise of run clubs were happening. So I had been to a bunch of run clubs to meet new people, especially post breakup. And I loved them, loved the community aspect of it, loved the running, obviously. But I noticed that none of them had a mission that really spoke to me. So I decided to start Good Grief Running. I threw the idea out to some of my friends in the running community, and they were like, awesome, tell us when and where, we'll show up. A friend of mine, Bryce, is one of the people behind Noble Joe Coffee.
Okay.
And so I asked him, I was like, hey, I want to start a run club. Can I start at your coffee shop? They have just a nice big gravel lot. And he was like, yep, let me connect you to Dane, who's one of the owners. And Dane was super supportive and said, let's do it.
Awesome.
So the first one we had was back in May, and it was about 30 people who were all my friends, some runners, some not. Some were like, I have never ran a day in my life. I hate you for making me get up at 7 a.m. on a Monday morning.
Right.
And from there, it just started growing week over week over week. And the growth has been amazing because I've met so many people who also started running for similar reasons or very different reasons. But a lot of people will come up to me after the run and share their story about, hey, I lost my mom to cancer. Also, this really spoke to me. Running has also changed my life. I'm so happy that there's this community now that exists. Or I had someone recently come up to me and say, I was never a runner. I was big into vaping, and because I came to your run club, I was so motivated by the community of people around me. I quit vaping. I'm running every single week now. I have just totally changed my lifestyle, and I'm much healthier. So hearing stories from one spectrum to another, whatever the background is, has been just so rewarding and cool to see. So it's grown a lot, and I think it's just because grieving is a very messy process, and I think to your point, it's like, where's the playbook? What do I do next?
Right.
Go for a run is such a simple task to do. Go for a walk if you can't run for one reason or another. And the benefits you see from it are almost immediate, like the endorphins that you get from running and the way your body feels. You can almost feel a bit of relief almost immediately. So I think combining the community with the physical aspect of movement has just been a really, really cool thing to see through Good Grief.
So these are cool. I can tell we're going to be friends because we're definitely speaking my language, not necessarily running, but community. These are things that I know I sound like a broken record to people, but community, physical activity.
Yeah.
I mean, those are, I just feel like they're pillars, you know, for anybody that's going through any type of grief or trauma. I do want to back up though, and I'll tell you why. I want to know what does training for a marathon look like? And the reason I'm asking that is some really close friends of mine, they reached out, and we've known each other for forever, and they're some of the most beautiful people in the world, and they live up in Virginia. And they said, you know, what are we going to do next year to honor Connor? Right. And so, you know, every year, this past year, we did a program called 75 Hard. All four of us did it together.
Yeah.
And Kim says, hey, look, I got an idea. Let's run the Marine Corps Marathon next year.
Sign me up. I'll do it with you. And it is big. Yeah.
Running is probably one of my least favorite exercises. Mm-hmm. So I do CrossFit, and anytime there's a workout that involves running, I'm like,
Yep.
However, I'm obviously very committed, you know, to finding some way to honor my son. So, what does training look like?
So you can either, I would recommend a program, but training honestly takes a lot of mental discipline.
Okay.
It is obviously physical. You're running a marathon.
Right.
But I think what's so beautiful about running marathons is that really anyone can do it as long as you're physically able. So anywhere from 12 to 20 weeks of training, if you're really dedicated, especially living in Austin, it means very early mornings because yep. it gets very hot here. So you'll be running 4 to 5 days a week, starting at around 5 to 6 a.m., depending on your schedule. And it is weeks and weeks and weeks of get up and do it again, get up and do it again,
okay.
get up and do it again. And it becomes almost routine. And I think, I don't know if this is a quote or it's something I saw on social media, but someone said, I dare you to train for a marathon and have it not change your life. Because it really did. I was never a morning person. You could not get me up before 10 a.m. on a Saturday. And now I'm waking up 7 a.m. on a Saturday and running 20 miles for fun. So it really will change your routine. You're learning about how your body is going to react at 20. The chafing, they don't talk about that enough. Like right. you're going to chafe in places. You're like, oh, that doesn't feel great. Nutrition, like it, everything kind of falls into, well, I'm training for a marathon and that's kind of, it's all consuming.
Yep.
If I'm being honest, because it's something that impacts your daily life. So when you're running 20 miles a day, you're very hungry. You're probably going to eat like 3,000 to 4,000 calories. You're going to eat a lot of carbs.
Right.
So it's a lot of mental and physical discipline. And I think with that, it's just a lot of changing your routine. But that is what also helped me get out of my rut because I didn't have a routine at the time.
Yeah.
I was getting up and going to work, but I wasn't like working toward something.
Yep.
So training for a marathon is tough, but I think everyone should do it at least once in their life. It teaches you a lot about yourself, especially when you get to those longer training runs and you want to give up because it's really hard.
Yeah.
It's all self-talk. Your body can physically do it, but your mind will give up before your body actually does.
Yeah.
And so it's teaching yourself to talk yourself through, I can do this. My body is more than capable of this. It's just if I'm willing to push myself hard enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it will definitely change your mentality about what you're capable of as well.
I think David Goggins calls that the little inner bitch voice. Yes. That's what he refers to.
Yeah. I said I was tough on myself earlier, and I definitely will hear myself like, don't you give up.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
A little bit of tough love, yeah. I think. But yeah, training for a marathon is pretty much all consuming.
Yeah.
And I think if you have a friend that trains for a marathon, they'll talk about it 24/7. and you'll hear, well, I can't go out tonight because I have a long run tomorrow.
Right.
Or I need to carb load tonight. Or it's... But it's fun, especially if you have a community to do it with. So
yeah.
I think, you know, I ran the New York City Marathon 2 weekends ago with a group from Austin. We all ran for longevity.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. But then it was really cool to see it was all of their first marathons. And now they're like, what are we going to do next? That was such a cool experience. I'm so proud of us.
Wow.
I didn't know I was capable of that. And so it's really cool to see that you can push yourself more than you even think possible.
So when you start the process, is there like a, and I know it's going to be different for everybody, but
sure.
is there like, okay, you should start with 2 miles and mm-hmm. do that for a certain period of time, then go to 5 or something like that? Is there like a general timeline?
Depending on your fitness level when you start, I would say you'll want to follow a training program. So anywhere from 12 to 20 weeks. I would say if you're a very beginner runner, the longer you have to train, the better, just so you can build up your endurance.
Makes sense, yep.
And yeah, typically you'll increase mileage throughout those 12 to 20 weeks, about a mile a week. You'll probably do some speed work in there, so it'll be shorter runs, but like faster.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually it depends on the training program.
Okay.
But we actually are doing a Good Grief Austin Marathon training program. So there's myself, my shameless plug.
How about that?
Yeah. Okay. For anyone that wants to run the Austin Marathon, we have a training group that's going on. So,
and when is that, the Austin Marathon?
The Austin Marathon is February of 2025. I think it's February 26th.
Okay.
So there's a lot of people whose first marathons, fifth marathons. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
Okay. I'm not going to commit to that right this second, but moving on.
When is the Marine Corps one?
I don't know. You know what? She told me the date, and I can't remember when it was. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's not in February. It's a pretty good ways off. Yeah.
I think you should do it.
I'm sure I will. And I'll love and hate every minute of it. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yep.
Okay. So let's talk about the physical activity side of things, because I get that, you know, between your ears is where a huge portion of it is.
Yeah.
But it also, it takes a toll on your body.
It does.
You know, and I think, you know, especially, you know, depending on body weight and that sort of stuff, I mean, it can be rough on joints.
Yes.
Particularly.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, from the physical aspect of things, you know, helping you get out of your kind of negative headspace, maybe talk about, you know, how that experience. Like, what steps did you go through? What experiences did you have along the way? I'm sure you didn't just start running and be like, oh, okay, everything's great now.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
My friend was my coach, so he kind of walked me through all of these things. Like, hey, don't just get up and run 10 miles because your knees are going to give out. Like that.
Okay.
So my personal experience, I started 2 or 3 miles at a time, very slow, and would do a lot of stretching, would implement yoga, would implement sauna, cold plunge, foam rolling, a lot of things for recovery.
Yep.
And slowly increasing my distances each week. So I think it's around 10% each week.
Oh, okay.
To increase.
Good, good.
Yeah. So not a lot, by a mile or even less each week.
Right.
But really emphasizing the recovery and getting enough sleep is a huge thing for recovery, which a lot of people struggle with, busy lives. Also, running, though, I think has helped my sleeping patterns a lot, because you're much more tired. You're like, okay, I'm ready for bed.
That helps, yeah.
So prioritizing recovery things like yoga, stretching, sauna, cold plunge, foam rolling. Depending if you have pre-existing injuries, maybe going to physical therapy, just so they can work through certain muscle groups with you. There's also a strength training portion aspect to running further distances.
Okay.
So making sure your hip flexors are strong and doing exercises to build up the muscles around your knees, around your ankles, so that they're supported during long runs. So that's a big piece that not a lot of people do enough of is the strength training portion for runners.
And is that strength training, is that like body weight strength training, or is that more
body weight, lightweight? It's tough to do any sort of heavy lifting because you don't really want to be sore
right.
Before you go on a long run. So lightweights, but really just targeting those specific areas for running.
Yep.
Prioritizing sleep and prioritizing nutrition, making sure you're eating enough. That was something I also, as a woman, I was like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. I'm eating like 3,000 calories a day, but you need it.
Yeah.
You like properly fueling your body is so important with fitness as well. Eat the cheeseburger if you want to eat. Like, eat two of them, actually, because you're about to burn 2,000 calories tomorrow when you go for a run.
Interesting, yep.
Proper nutrition is so, so important as well, and making sure you're eating enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, that's a lot.
Yeah. That's, I would say when you ask what does training for a marathon look like, it takes over kind of your whole, it's all consuming, diet, sleep,
yeah,
fitness, nutrition, yeah,
yeah,
all of it. But it is the most rewarding experience when you cross that finish line. That's why you see so many people break down and sob.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I did it. After these 20 weeks, like, a lot of people say the toughest part of a marathon is the training, and the actual race is the celebration for all of the hard work that you put in.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So do you think when somebody starts running,
mm-hmm,
and sets a goal, say, to do a marathon.
Sure.
Do you think they're running away from something or running towards something?
That's a great question. Transparently, I can speak for myself and say it was a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I originally signed up because I wanted to prove to myself that I could get through something very hard.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's running away from something or towards something, I'm not really sure.
Right.
This is going to sound so cheesy and cliche, but I really like ran toward a better version of myself.
That doesn't sound cheesy at all.
Something I didn't even realize I had in me.
Yeah.
Especially when you're in the lowest like place of your life that you've ever been, and you're like, I don't think I can get through this. I don't have much left to give. And then you do.
Yeah.
You just do. And so I think I was running toward something.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe when I signed up, I think I was running away from some feelings that I just was uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
But throughout the process, I realized I was running toward a new version of myself.
Yeah, that's great. I've got a good friend who, he's kind of a psycho. Fitness-wise, he stopped drinking,
yep,
and took that. I'll say addiction. I mean, he wasn't an alcoholic by any stretch, but you know that was part of his daily routine for sure. And he replaced it with fitness.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day he texts me. He goes, "Hey man, I'm doing the Escape from Alcatraz Ironman next weekend."
Oh,
and
okay.
I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, you know, I just started training for it a while back and I just felt like it was something I needed to do." I was like, "Okay."
So he's extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah. All in or all out.
All in or
all
out.
I can appreciate it.
Yes.
I get it.
Yeah. I figured you would appreciate that story. Okay, look, that makes perfect sense. And I do, I've said this a few different times, and it's not an original thought. I'm sure I heard it somewhere else, but I think, you know, without a healthy and strong body, it's hard to be healthy or strong mentally or emotionally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, having a healthy, strong body doesn't guarantee you're going to be, you
yeah
know, healthy emotionally. But I'm pretty sure that if you don't have one, it's a guarantee you won't be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's great. I love that message. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about community.
Yes.
Because this is another one that is, and this goes back to, you know, you go through some sort of tragedy or trauma,
mm-hmm,
and the people you expect are going to be there for you aren't. But then all of a sudden you have all these people who you never expected would be there, and they are. And that's community.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel so strongly about this. I have always been a very extroverted person, love meeting new people, and have been fortunate to be surrounded by so many great people. I would say over the last couple of years, my friend group has changed a lot. Just given one, growing up, I think obviously.
Sure.
Moving, different phases of life. But the activities and the hobbies that I'm doing and who I'm surrounding myself with daily during those activities. When I started running and specifically training for the marathon, I met a lot of people who were also training for a marathon or big into the running community. And those people that I met were some of the most incredible humans. Like, whether it was the story, it was their kindness, it was their drive, it was always pushing me to do better for myself and themselves, and being able to do it together was really, really awesome to see. I think community is the most important thing, and it's such a buzzword right now. I think a lot of people, especially in marketing, people are like, oh, how do we have this community, and what does that actually mean?
Right.
So it's obviously a group of people that have like-minded interests or like-minded goals, but then a step beyond that is actually showing up for each other. Which I think, to tie it back to good grief, I've seen week over week people making new friends and then showing up together and exchanging phone numbers and doing things outside of good grief. And it has just been really cool to see, because it's a lot of like-minded people who are looking to better themselves. And really being able to lean on those people. I think with good grief, it's interesting because with the mission behind it, you probably have a story if you're there. Or maybe you're showing up for a friend who has a story. And so there's automatically, I think, that layer is shed of, oh, I'm nervous to bring something up. Or a lot of people will come up to me and say, like, I found this because my mom passed away. And I would think that at most other run clubs, you probably wouldn't have that as the first thing you talk about. Oh, I just moved to Austin and I'm looking to make new friends. But I think it's maybe easier to get a little bit deeper sooner, just given that you're there for a common reason.
Sure.
But yeah, community is so, so important. And whether it's the people that you expected or it's brand new people around you, I think it's really interesting to see who is there to lift you up during these times. But to lean on the ones that do show up.
I agree wholeheartedly. You know, it's also interesting too. I do, you know, because the running club is called Good Grief, people, like you said, people who are attracted to that probably have experienced or are experiencing some sort of grief. And I know from my own personal experience, the first men's retreat that I went on, you know, we all got to this place and we got 20 Gold Star dads together, and none of us know each other. We didn't know each other ahead of time, and everybody's in a completely different state of mind. But suddenly when you get around 20 people who all have lost their sons, it's powerful. I mean, super, super powerful. So I think, and especially with loss and grief, I mean, it's somebody who hasn't, and look, the worst thing that's ever happened to you is the worst thing that's ever happened to you, right? So there is no hierarchy for loss or grief. But for somebody who hasn't, like, really experienced, you know, loss, or is really experiencing, like, you know, deep, deep grief, it's hard. I think it's hard for them to relate, and it's also hard, you know, for you or me to relate.
And,
but when you get around people who are experiencing it, you know, it makes things a little bit easier.
It is. I think it totally changes your perspective on what is inconvenient versus what's actually a problem. I think, especially going through everything I did with my mom, and then you would get around a group of friends and they'd be like, oh, today I dropped my coffee and I had a horrible, you know, obviously that's a bad example,
no,
but
I know what you're saying.
Something that I'm just like, that feels so silly. That wouldn't even bother me. You can't hurt me. Like, do you know what happened to me? Like, so it's interesting, just perspective of it,
it
as
is.
Well.
Yeah, it changes things. I don't think that I've said this out loud yet to anybody other than my wife. Actually, maybe one of my closest friends. But after losing Connor last November, I just lost my dad a few months ago suddenly. And thank you. And I've been going through this almost guilt, because I'm like not grieving the loss of my father, because the loss of my son was so it's almost like I don't have any more grief left in my body.
I can relate to that immensely.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, my dad also has cancer.
Right.
And it's this crazy feeling where it's scary and it's consuming, and I am like, but I also feel like I don't have any grief left in my body to be like, he's also going through this. And it's almost like you go a little bit numb.
It's a good way to describe it.
It's like you're, I don't know, maybe for me it's your, you've done all the grieving you can do. I'm like, it's just so heavy. It's so heavy. And when you kind of feel that like glimmer of coming out of it, you're like, I really don't want to go back.
Yeah.
And so you almost don't let yourself, maybe. But yeah, I think it's really tough because it totally changes your perspective on things too.
Sure.
Like, yeah, I understand what you mean when you say there's like no grieving left in you. Yeah.
I think another part is too, and I've heard a bunch of different analogies, but one of the ones that I used, and then people talk about, you know, basically building calluses, right? And one of the ones that I used is, to me, you know, when I was trying to figure out, okay, how long is this going to take before I don't feel this way anymore? When is my grief going to go away? And kind of where I started landing, I was like, think about you go all winter long and you wear shoes. And then the weather breaks and you want to go barefoot, and you go outside and you walk on, you know, some sort of, you know, not super smooth pavement, and it hurts your feet. Or the pavement is hot and it burns your feet. But you keep doing it, and eventually nothing's changed. As a matter of fact, the pavement's probably hotter. You know, maybe you're walking on even rougher terrain, but your feet are so calloused that you don't really, it doesn't affect you anymore.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, you know, if part of that is like, you know, as we go through this grieving process, we do, we just kind of, it doesn't get easier. It doesn't get better. No. We just learn to deal with it more. We, and I hate to say we get calloused.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's not like we're unemotional, and, you know, people obviously.
Yeah.
I don't think people go unemotional or anything like that. But anyway, I just wonder, it's just been on my mind the last few months, and that's kind of where my head is right now.
I think honestly, just for survival, you can't live in that state for forever.
Yeah. Good point.
And there's always going to be things that continue to happen. And if you're just stuck in that low, low, low point, it's like you're not going to be able to live your everyday life.
You know, that's a great point. So, yeah, I guess if you let yourself get stuck in that dark place and you drop your coffee one day, that could be the trigger that just puts you over the edge.
Yeah.
Right? Something as trivial as that.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think once you, it's almost like you build up this muscle where you're like, okay, I'm having a really tough day today. Like, I know that these are the things I can do to get myself out of this headspace, because you've been here before.
Yeah.
And so now you know how to flex that muscle.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's necessarily you're out of grieving, or you obviously care and it's hard regardless, but you just now have the tools to know how to get yourself out of that bad mental place.
How to
quicker.
Cope. Yeah. I think in addiction recovery, they call it coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good point. The brain.
It's a very interesting thing. It is, but it's messy. And I like, with good grief, it's just finding the good in grief too. Like, obviously I'm a marketing person, so I'm like, the branding is a little bit messy because grieving is messy, and I don't want it to be this thing where people are like, okay, I need to show up polished. And No, it's messy and it's not linear and it is confusing. Everyone deals with it so differently. And there's a big guilt factor to it. I felt immense amount of guilt going about my daily life.
Mm-hmm.
Before I lost my mom, even like today, sometimes I'm like, this feels kind of weird. I'm like going to a concert and all of a sudden I remember that my mom died. And I'm like, whoa, okay, that's weird. This song reminds me of her. I'm like slowly putting my sunglasses on so I can like cry silently. So yeah, it's messy and it doesn't go away. You just build up coping mechanisms to deal with it. And then you also create new memories around it too. So you just build up more strength than you had before.
Yeah, and I still experience this every once in a while, and I don't think this is abnormal, so it's why I share it. Mm-hmm. But I do, sometimes I'll catch myself, like if I'm happy, I'll feel guilty.
Yes.
Yeah. And that sucks. It really sucks.
Before my mom passed, which I feel very fortunate that I had the opportunity to speak with her and get all of those things out, and one of the things I said was like, how am I supposed to be happy? Like, and she was like, do you think that's what I would want for you? You know, I don't want you to be sad. I want to see you happy. Mm-hmm. You know, like the biggest thing I want for you and your sister is for you to be happy.
Yeah.
So when I get into that place of feeling guilty, like, oh my gosh, I'm living such a normal life and it feels weird, I just remember like, is that what she would actually want for me? Like, right. She wouldn't want me to be sitting here crying. She would want me to get up, keep moving, do what makes you happy, and live my life.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. When I delivered Connor's eulogy, mm-hmm. I closed it with three questions to everybody.
Yeah.
And I said, what would Connor expect us to do? What would he want us to do? And what could we do to honor him? Right. And I just told people like he would expect us to cry and to be sad.
Yes.
That's normal. But then he would want us to remember the good times and, you know, think about all the great things that he did and pay it forward. And then, you know, what we could do to honor him, that's a question that, you know, only you can answer for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, when Kim was like, hey, Marine Corps Marathon, I think he would dig that. He was a Marine.
Right.
It's like, yeah, man, Connor, you're sending me a sign through Kim that this is what I could do to honor him. So, yeah.
That would be awesome.
I'm with you. I think that I think you're right. I think your mom would want you to keep moving forward, doing what you're doing, carrying the torch. Mm. And obviously, you know, you've created a space. You've created one for you, but you've also created a space for lots of other people. And I would love to hear, you know, if you've got some, you know, some success stories or something like that. I mean, I would love to hear some of them.
Yeah. I get emotional because I felt like I didn't really have a space to figure it out and grieve. Unfortunately, but fortunately, I had friends who had also lost parents from cancer or other reasons. And so I felt like I had that community to lean on. Mm-hmm. But on an everyday basis, I didn't really find that, which is why I created it.
Yeah,
But one, I mean, as simple as the person who came up to me and said, I quit vaping because I started coming to good grief.
Yeah.
I literally started crying when I heard that because I was like, if I can help you feel like a better version of yourself from something so small, that changes my life. Like, mm-hmm. that is amazing. I had a girl reach out to me recently, and she actually lives in Boston. She doesn't even live in Austin, has never been to good grief. But she DM'd me and she watched one of the videos that I had on our social media, just kind of sharing the story of why I started it. And she just said, like, thank you for sharing this. Running has also changed my life. I lost my mom to cancer and I started running and raising money for marathons for the same exact reason. And I wish I had this when, you know, I originally lost her, because I would have had a place to know where I could go faster.
Yeah.
So hearing stories like that, we're actually chatting next week because she wants to start a good grief in Boston. So I'm like, let's do it. Awesome. If we can help more people. Yeah. And I mean, like a silly little story. It's weird because every good grief is on Mondays, and kind of every Monday morning I'll say a little prayer to my mom and I try to commemorate her by like, hey mom, it's because of you. Like, how cool. All these people are here.
Yeah.
And this wouldn't have existed, you know, if I didn't like think about ways to honor you and think of things to do for her. So I always just think about her every Monday. And yeah. So it's been really, really like healing for me as well in that aspect to be like, great. Look at all of these people who are showing up and sharing their stories with me for themselves and also just each other. It's really awesome.
It is powerful.
Yeah.
You know what? And I feel like that sort of stuff, when, you know, obviously you created a community, you didn't find it, but when you find a community that, you know, especially when you're talking about becoming a better version of yourself, you know, through running or something like that, I feel like it totally carries over into all other parts of your life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was down bad. I know I mentioned that, but then I got let go from my dream job and I was like, you know, what's next? Yeah. I started Good Grief and I was like, I can do this on my own. Like, I can do this. Yeah. So not only did, you know, it taught me that I'm capable of doing so much more physically than I thought possible.
Right.
But also I'm like, I have the ability to create things on my own. I don't really need to wait for someone else to say, yes, you're hired. Like, I can work for myself.
Right.
So it transferred over into my professional life. I was like, I can be an entrepreneur. Like, look at what I did. And now I can do this to make money for like my marketing agency. So that's been really cool to see. And just friendships, like knowing how to show up in friendships, romantic relationships. It has carried over immensely. I know how to show up better, how to support better. And if I don't exactly know how, I've learned how to ask, like, what can I do to help you? Do you want support? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or do you want to be alone today? So yeah, it carries over into every aspect.
Yeah. That was you were on a good roll, so I didn't want to stop you earlier, but you made me just think of something that you said. And my good friend Lawrence, who was on the podcast before you, so his wife owns the gym that I go to, and they're the most amazing people, and they were there like immediately. Like, she set up the meal train and everybody from the gym community just, you know, took care of that, which was, I can't even tell you how, positively impactful. Like, the last thing Rochelle and I were thinking about was cooking dinner.
Yeah.
Right. For a long time. But one of the things Lawrence said to me, he said, dude, I'm here for you. You just tell me, you know, if you want to sit down and talk, or, you know, I'll just listen if you want. He said, I don't drink alcohol, but if you want, I'll watch you drink a beer.
Yeah.
And the other thing that he said, which sounded so weird the first time he said it, he said, or if you just want to sit in silence.
Yes.
And you mentioned that earlier. And I really think it's important for people. Silence can be awkward. Like, I get it. But sometimes, you know, when somebody's going through something and trying to figure stuff out, sometimes just having a warm body that cares there close by is huge.
Yeah.
You don't need to say anything or do anything, or, you know, you just just be there.
I actually think some of those times were the most helpful for me because fortunately, the amount of text messages, the amount of messages, comment, like things that flood your inbox of, I'm so sorry. Like, it's so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because in the moment you feel like, oh, I need to respond to this person. They're reaching out to me. Thank you. But you're like, I don't have the emotional capacity
right.
to reach out to, like, I just want to shut my phone off and curl in a ball in my bedroom. Mm-hmm. So I think the times where it's the silent support, sitting in the same room, watching movie together is just as important
yeah.
as those, how are you? Sometimes that question was so triggering because I'm like, I don't even know how to answer that.
No.
You know? I'm like, I think you know how I am.
Yeah.
But obviously very thoughtful and appreciative. It's just can be very overwhelming talking about it all the time, especially yeah. when you're in the thick of it. The sitting in silence is really helpful.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the how are you doing question, and I struggled with it for a while. You know, at the beginning, I just ignored. When people asked me that, I just ignored it.
I did too.
Yeah. And as I've, you know, let's just say matured through this process, I've really landed on, like, anytime somebody says something or asks me a question, the only thing I think about is, okay, what was their intention with that question?
Yeah.
Right? And I think it's super important because people get bunched up when they think, oh, you know, why are they asking me this? They know how I am. They shouldn't ask me that. Well, they're asking because they really care.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a, you know, hey, how you doing?
Being yeah.
passing on the street yeah. type of thing.
How are you?
Yeah. So anyway, I think that's worth mentioning. I think it's a good point that, I think people that ask that question need to understand that somebody who's going through the grieving process, it kind of depends on when you ask them, and it could change
yeah.
literally by the minute,
mm-hmm.
you know, for sure, by the hour, the day. Yeah, but I've done it exactly what you said. I've said to people a lot.
Yeah.
That's a complicated question. I don't know how to answer it right now.
Yeah.
You know, and people understand yeah. when I say that.
To my close friends who were doing it, obviously, because they cared, at a certain point, I was like, hey, I actually would appreciate if you just stopped asking me that question. Because they would do it as a way to check in, you know, how are yes. you doing today?
Yeah.
And I, getting a message with anything checking in meant so much. But I was like, maybe instead of asking that question, you could just say, hey, I'm thinking about you right now. If you need anything, let
good
me know.
Good point. Yeah.
So if anyone's listening and asks a friend going through something, maybe instead of asking, how are you? It's just, I'm thinking about you. Let me know how I can support you.
That is a very good point. Yep.
Yep.
I like that. Awesome. Well, what's next for Sam? And what's next for the Good Grief Running Club? Obviously, the Austin Marathon, we know that.
Yes. Well, I'm actually not running the Austin Marathon. I am so excited to support everyone running the Austin Marathon.
But okay.
Because I just did New York, I'm excited to take a break on my knees.
Understood.
But we'll have a Good Grief cheer section. So if you see us out there, we'll be rooting for you. If you decide to run, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
With Good Grief, honestly, just hoping to continue expanding the community. I would really love to start offering some resources for people.
Okay.
I met a wonderful woman who is a grief therapist recently, and she and I were chatting about how we could do some sort of partnership with Good Grief and offer services, or still figuring things out there, but would love to expand into actually more outside of the physical piece and helping with the mental piece a little bit more
okay.
and supporting there. So more to come on that, but excited to watch Good Grief grow. For me, we'll definitely be leaning more into that, working on growing the business, and excited to go home for Thanksgiving to be with my family. So that's what's next immediately.
That's awesome.
Lots of quality time with family and friends.
Yeah, that's always that's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Rochelle's going to laugh when I say this because she's tired of me talking about it. But you mentioned sauna and cold plunging.
Yes.
So where do you do that?
I actually just got a membership. It's called Centered.
Okay.
It's in East Austin.
Okay.
But it's unlimited sauna and cold plunge.
That's awesome.
It's $110 a month. So I do that. I know that there have been many, many places and pop-ups around Austin happening with sauna, cold plunge.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan, especially for running. And honestly, after just having like a long day sitting in the sauna, I sleep like a baby. Yeah. So yeah, I go to Centered.
I haven't done the sauna thing. I've definitely heard and read a lot about it. The cold therapy is...
it's brutal.
That's my thing, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I'm saving up for my old cold plunge tank at home.
Are you?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Do you have one at the CrossFit gym?
So the new one they're building, yes, they'll have a whole recovery room.
Cool.
So they'll have, I think he said it's going to have two cold plunge tanks. They'll have a sauna. There'll obviously be a, not obviously, but there'll be a massage therapist available for appointments. Another thing, red light therapy, is that what you said?
Yeah.
I think so.
Like infrared, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I've only heard about that recently. I don't know a whole lot. I haven't dove real deep into it. But
apparently it's very, very good for you.
And that's what I hear.
Regeneration of cells, and there's a lot of research around infrared therapy and cancer as well. So apparently it's very good for you.
Interesting. All right.
I'm not a scientist, but I look into a lot of the holistic approaches as well.
Yeah.
Especially stuff with my dad still too. So yeah,
that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So if people want to find out more about Good Grief Running Club, where do they go?
You can follow us on Instagram at Good Grief Running.
Okay.
Or myself, just Sam_Hendel.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, Sam, is there anything else you want to throw in before we button things up?
I just really appreciate the conversation and openness about it. And I think it's a really beautiful thing what you're doing. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It is my pleasure. Thank you for coming in. And I would be remiss if I didn't say I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you. Yeah. And you as well.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. Good Grief Running. All right. I'm not going to commit on air about coming out and training, but don't be surprised if you see me show up. Yeah,
let's do it. I'm excited. Monday morning, 7 a.m. at Noble Joe Coffee. Awesome. We will see you there.
All right, great. Thanks, Sam.
Cool. Thank you.